And you're very welcome to another edition of the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. I am your host, Corey Kilcrady, along with Lisa O'Reilly. And it's another month, Lisa, to look forward to another property podcast. And well, Lisa, we had a huge response to our last podcast with Kevin McDonald. But suppose until we dig into that, how has your month been so far since we last spoke?
Yeah, no, really good. So yesterday, well, this morning actually, we closed on a big 8-bed house with a separate granny flat. So I'm going to have this kicking off now the weekend. And went sale agreed there on another 4-bed house. So yeah, it's all going really well. I suppose I was quiet for probably the last 3 or 4 months. I went to Australia at Christmas. I had my cruciate ligament done in January, so it was kind of under the radar a little bit. But now I'm back up and running, and it's all kicked off with a bang, so it's brilliant.
As off today.
How about you, Pork? How's it all going with you?
Yeah, well, there's a list of buildings which is causing some fun and conversations over the last couple of weeks, you could say. Suppose it's been a learning journey on the list of building our 8-bed HMO that we're just about to start. We can't really do anything until that is agreed what we can do. And suppose our latest HMO is just finished and we just sealed agreed on another 6-bed. So it's been extremely busy over the last number of weeks, but yeah, looking forward to the sunshine that we're hopefully going to have over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully is the word. Look, we had a massive response to our last special guest that we had on the podcast. We're getting used to the special guest, Lisa, and I think we have a really, really good guest today. Who have we got on the podcast?
So I had the pleasure of meeting Gareth up in Dublin there not so long ago. And Gareth Pearce is a bit of a powerhouse when it comes to property in Ireland and across the UK. So Gareth Pearce, welcome to our podcast, and please introduce yourself a bit more, better than what I can.
Okay. Hi, Lisa. Hey, Pádraig. And thank you very much for the invite. This year I had a goal, not great at kind of public speaking or these podcasts. So this year I had a goal of getting on six podcasts. So I think I'm number 4 now. So thank you again for inviting me. So my name is Gareth Pearce. I'm from Dublin, the city close to the city centre of Dublin. 52 years of age. Have a wife and 2 daughters, who are twin daughters who are 21. I got into property, bought my first buy to let when I was 21. So that'll give you, so in at 31 years of age, or to 21 years of age, so in about 31 years at the moment. My property journey goes across all strategies, well, nearly all strategies that we're familiar with, from single buy-to-lets to apartments to developments to HMO to commercial to resi conversions, shared living and flats and everything. So that's I've done nearly all strategies and made mistakes in every single one of those areas through my journey. I've built several multi-million pound portfolios over the last 30 years. 208 wasn't kind to me, like it wasn't kind to many people. And I found myself starting again just after the crash, headed to England, because I didn't see much opportunity, and started doing a bit of investing in England, and that kind of snowballed as well. Predominantly, I focus in Dublin city centre, and my strategy now is probably, well, it hasn't really changed my strategy. My strategy is I buy derelict buildings, run down buildings, and then add value to those. We have a building team, contractors team. We have about 15 full-time employees. We have a full maintenance team, and we have our own in-house letting agency. So we've kind of all of the boxes ticked in that area, and then we use contractors outside of that. Currently, I have six projects on the go at the moment. Sorry, 8 projects on, 3 in England and 5 here at the moment. And about to start another one on Monday. And they are a mixture of commercial to resi. We have bought a building and we've done a PD for emergency accommodation on that through that planning. We have flats we're renovating at the moment. We just bought a guest house and we'll be turning that. We'll look at a strategy of maybe going the emergency accommodation or putting that to a provider. If that's not successful, we'll do a kind of an apart hotel into that product.
So Gareth, going back to some of the projects that you're doing there, do you have the tenants in mind before you purchase, and in terms of then the PD you mentioned, the permitted development, is that a UK term, and then you're also using that in Ireland, because I think there is some sort of exempted development, isn't there, for commercial?
Yeah. Okay. There's two things. So the legislation was changed on the emergency provider there, I think about 18 months ago in Ireland, and that allows a building that was unoccupied for a commercial building unoccupied for 2 years that you can put it straight into emergency accommodation status planning. We're doing that at the moment. We're doing another building which was vacant, a commercial building which was vacant for over 2 years, and we're doing upper resi and we're leaving the down floor as a retail. So the tenants of mine, so if you say the emergency accommodation property that we have, once we get that we should just hand that over to a provider. We haven't got there. We've worked with two providers that we've got some of our units into the emergency accommodation, and we'll be using either one of those for one of our projects. And the guest house, we have that, we've sent that in for approval, and we're just waiting on the provider to come back on that. If that fails, we'll just go down the normal apart hotel route, which my numbers on that particular project. So when I purchased the guest house, I did numbers on an apart hotel, like a kind of an Airbnb style. And I done my numbers on an emergency accommodation, and two of them are really, either strategy will work better. The emergency accommodation, it's hands off. I would probably have to get a provider for the Airbnb if the emergency accommodation doesn't come true.
So do you need the planning then? There's no planning required for apart hotels, as long as it's commercial already.
When I say apart hotel, it's a guest house. It's planning for a guest house already. Okay. So I'm just using the term apart hotel. What I mean is they'll let themselves in. There's a model over, and there's a couple of guys doing it in England. Stuart Scott is doing it in England. I don't know whether you know Stuart Scott. He's the HMO guy. He's doing these kind of high class apart hotels where the people let them in themselves. So that's the strategy I'll be using on that. And the numbers, obviously, hotels that are shortage down here in Dublin. So accommodation for
the question, I was going to say, that's a trend, would you see, Gareth, as a growing trend, apart hotels, because of the squeeze on hotels at the minute?
Yeah, this was offered to me. This is the first time I've done this, by the way. So this was offered to me, and so I just done some due diligence on. So I assess a building three ways. One, that I have to rent it to this to the rental market as a residential. That one was the worst case scenario for me, but it was still okay because it was an 11 bed property. All unsuited on Camden Street. So that worked for me. If I had to just rent that from what I paid for it, then that would have given me X amount of yield. So that was three ways I looked. I assessed it. I did my due diligence on this building. The second was the emergency accommodation provider. And then the third was the kind of the Airbnb or a guest house, just renting rooms as a guest house. I used the term apart hotel because I'll be using the model I'll be putting that model in where I don't have to let people in. I don't have to serve them breakfast or stuff like that.
And then in the bedrooms, then would there be like those little kind of kitchenettes and the bathrooms? No, there's just communal kitchen.
Yeah, there's just a big communal kitchen where we'll stock up and people can serve themselves in the morning, and we'll just have a girl. When I looked at it, we'll just have a girl going in. Obviously, there's cleaners and there's laundry to be done, but we'll just have a girl going in there in the morning and doing a kind of continental style breakfast and just lay it out, and the people can help themselves then.
Or a man, obviously, not just a girl.
Sorry?
Or a man as well could go in and serve the breakfast and do the cleaning. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, here we go. or a man.
I know this property world is full of men, but you know.
Or a he, she, whatever you want to. Now you have to embarrass me, Lisa. You have to throw me off the train.
Metropolitan, Lisa. Metropolitan.
You're going too well.
And by the way, Lisa, I've 9 sisters, so.
Surely one of them will clean the apart hotel for yourself.
Yeah. they actually do.
Yeah. Oh God.
Joking.
Okay. That's a great strategy, and you might have to get the brush out yourself as well, Gareth, you know.
Suppose
that all sounds great, Gareth, and I know you started off with your 2008 hat on, like a lot of us. You probably came through that, and that's a story we're going to dig into now as well. If anything would put you off, maybe talk us through that time, and What was your portfolio like then, and some of the challenges that you had, what did that look like?
Not very well after the 2008 crash. I suppose property prices dropped around between 50% and 60% actually in some of our assets at the time, and it was long and drawn out, and I had a business partner who passed away during that period as well. My business partner, he was only 36 at the time, so that was another blow as well. What can I say? I was trying to battle the banks like everybody else. I was trying to manage the portfolio, trying to collect rents. 50%.
What was the strategy then, Gareth?
Survival. Survival.
And was it standard buy-to-lets, and it was just survival at that
stage? No, it was a mixture of everything again. It was buy-to-lets, commercial, a mixture of all the stuff I have now, flats, apartments, houses. It was a mixture of commercial. We had an industrial estate. We had a big mixture of stuff across our portfolio.
What did you find suffered the most? Was it the residential? Was it the commercial? What was the one that fell off the cliff?
Residential. So property prices fell by 50%. Rents fell by 50%. Like, we were getting for a studio just before the crash around 1,000 for a studio in the city. They dropped down to about 350, 400. And that's an example of one bed dropped down to about probably 500 or 600, and we were probably getting 1,200 or 1,300 for them at the time. We were trying to meet our obligations on interest only. The banks probably didn't know where they were going. They were caught in headlights as well. I think everybody was. I certainly was. When they said you fall off a cliff, you fall off a cliff. So yeah, in any case, I got through that. Learned so much from that. Learned about leverage that everybody talks about, but when it happens to you, leverage, it's a different thing. So from that, when I came out of that, I suppose I'd learned a lot of lessons, one in property, and I was good to go probably after 2014, 2015. I kind of started to pick myself up again, because it was a long drawn out process, because we had to sell down our assets and stuff like that. But I learned so much from that time. And to be honest, I'm grateful. I know people saying that, but I'm really grateful for that time, because I wouldn't have learned what I know now, to be honest. And I would have just kept going, and the problem would have just went on and on and on, you know. And you'd have got cockier and cockier, and you think you're invincible. So was really good. It was good at the time. It wasn't, because we lost everything, but it was good.
And I suppose it's taken you a long time to accept that. You know, when you mentioned at the start, you, Gareth, that can't be easy to swallow. But I'm going to dig into the learnings here, because
yeah,
I really like the way you've kind of you've owned it, and the cockiness is the other aspect. We do see a lot on social media now about it's trendy to be a property investor, and it comes with risk. But you know, let's break that down a little bit. Why do you feel you were cocky back then?
Because money was being thrown at you, so you didn't have to be a clever investor to get money, and I don't. Everybody was getting buy-to-lets. Everybody was into property. I'm talking everybody down from, and no reflection on, you know, but people working in supermarkets down to everybody. Everybody had it. I mean, it was like the Big Short at the time. And I remember Permanent TSB brought out a product, self-certification, and you could just certify your own income. And I think I drew down within 7 days, 7 to 10 days, £1 million. From them, like it was when you, I know it, when you look back at it,
yeah,
it was bananas. It was crazy. Actually bananas. So you thought that everything that you'd done, you were great, but everybody was doing the same because money was free, and so you could buy anything at the time. So
and you know, back then, Gareth, like, so now we're trying to get like value, you know, and doing up the kind of the bangers that nobody wants sort of thing. That's like kind of what our general strategy is now. But back then, was it a case of like all these new builds, you would go in and get the new builds sort of thing because the banks were throwing money at you?
No, my strategy was the same. We bought a couple of new builds, but my strategy was pretty much the same. I was always trying to add, I kind of learned, how I learned my property investing was adding value. Whatever my mentor was back then, it was all about trying to increase the value of the property. So that's how I started off in property, and that's how it continued. I bought a couple of off plans in England. I think I bought 15 apartments in England, never seen them off plans. So done all of that kind of stuff. But adding value is always my strategy. The problem was that obviously, you know, that property is capital intensive. So you've got to create that margin somewhere. You got to create that profit somewhere. We just kept, how we kept create the profit, just kept refine. And we were too, obviously we were too highly geared. I actually stopped buying in, I think our last purchase was around 204, the end of 204, the beginning of 205 at the time. And because I couldn't see any value, because they were pricing assets at the time 20 times the income, which would have been a gross yield of 5%.
Okay,
so that's Jesus, right. So a lot of the stuff in the city was being priced at that. Everybody was doing property at the time, you know, and there was so many banks lending money, and they're all trying. Then Bank of Scotland came into the market, and they were really aggressive lenders, and you could get nearly 100% plus the refurb off that. So you could get 100% of the purchase and almost all of the refurb.
It was crazy times. I remember when, so I was just qualifying as an accountant. I wasn't even qualified. And I was on, I think I was on around 18 grand a year. And my husband, he was just qualified as a mechanic. So we were on really bad money, the two of us. And we were new building our house. And we went to the bank, and I think they approved us for 330,000. And that we were both on in and around like the 20 grand mark salary, you know. It was just crazy. And
it was
the reason why they said it was because of our potential. It was like self-certifying, what you said about permanent TV. It was just crazy times. That was our own experience with it, you know. It was crazy.
So I suppose the struggles now that we're kind of, we see in the finance now, that's a good thing, by the way. I know we complain that there's not many people in the market, but that makes it more difficult. And to be honest, it is a good thing. A good thing. We need more competition in the market, but it's the madness has gone out of it. Like, finance is hard to navigate.
Yeah, I think I would be with you that it's good to be prudent. However, I think we have a serious lack of funders in the market. I think if they can maintain 100%. Their level of like due diligence, but if we have more funders, like where they can compete with each other, I think we're seriously lacking in the Republic of Ireland.
100%. But what do you know what will happen, Lisa? And I've seen it. That will open up. And then market will just go, yeah, of course it will. It's all time. It's all property is just a game. And there'll be lenders will come in, there'll be more buyers coming in, and then that floodgate is all gonna open again. 100%.
Yeah.
That can be frustrating. For example, a lot of people that there is a lot more education out there for people who want to get into property investment. And obviously in Ireland, as we've pointed out, the lender situation, it's difficult at the minute. But when you see the stats around people that need property, you see the stats around, you know, how many hotel rooms that they are left, you know, it is a very frustrating place to be in at the minute currently, and trying to make it work and making a profit out of it as well.
Yeah, I agree. I had a conversation with a colleague of mine, you probably know him, a friend of mine, Stephen, today, and I was just saying, like, it's hard to find deals. It's hard to get contractors. It's hard to get finance. So there's a lot of challenges. I do believe there's a lot of challenges around it, around property investing at the moment. But I equally think that the smarter guys, you know, if you're smart in property, you'll do good in property. And by the way, property is 20. For me, it's a long-term game. I can't tell you the last time I sold a property. Well, obviously in 2014, but since I've got back into it, I haven't really sold anything. And I'll probably hold them or pass them on to my kids or whatever. But I'm a long-term investor in property. I mean, I remember one of the properties I had, my wife had actually, and she has it 20 years now. And that's just paying her, you know, that's paying her year on year on year. So I don't, even though I want to make the returns, I want to make it, I still keep in saying property is a long-term investment game.
So the one thing I would say, Gareth, and I think I agree with you, is for me, when I go to invest, first of all, it needs to be positive cash flowing. And I look for a certain yield. Like I go for a high, it requires a lot of work. HMOs, as you know, they require a lot of work. But net after all the costs, I'm looking for, you know, just around the 13 to 15% mark return on investment. So that's my number one. My number two then would be capital appreciation. But because I'm based, say, down in the south, and unlike yourself, where you're in Dublin, our capital appreciation probably doesn't go up as quickly as, say, as Dublin. So could you tell our listeners, you know, what are your, what do you look for in an investment, and what are the, you know, what should people be looking out for?
Okay, I'll give you an example of a deal. I'll tell you the exact location of it. This is a protected structure. It's a derelict building, and it's on the derelict site. This wouldn't be for everybody, by the way. I see an opportunity in that because nobody will go near it. I've got the team to navigate around that. When I do that property up, so this is a city centre location. It's a derelict building. It's protected structure. So I think there's only one or two bids on this particular property because people are afraid of that. So to me, then, that's an opportunity if you know how to navigate around it. And that's getting the professional team, is having the right team in place. And I have a good conservation architect, I have a good architect, I have good engineers, so I can navigate around those properties. I'll turn that into I hate saying double digit return, but I'll be able to get that in that property because I have the knowledge. How did I get the knowledge? By making all the mistakes. And I'm not on here to say that you've got to make mistakes, and they're not mistakes, they're learnings. I got shut down by enforcement, by planning, got tied up in a year and a half in court over a building. I had dodgy builders, bad architects, bad engineers. And at the time I didn't know, because there wasn't the education around property that there is now. I think the first guy I went to see was a guy called Russ Whitney, and he ended up going to jail for tax fraud. But he was very good. His strategy was very good. What came out of there was a couple of people in the UK came out of that. I went to that was the first, but I've continued educating myself year on year. I have a mentor. I have a property mentor, and I've several mentors that I would get knowledge and I would throw a deal. And then I've got people that in the industry like yourself that I would bounce off. And I said, what do you think of this? I'm looking at this. Have you any angles around this? So we would meet once a month. I'm in the property entrepreneur board. Equally, they have all challenges and everybody has challenges. And once they're shared and you can get the knowledge, it's a lot easier now to find how to fix a problem, I believe now, when that pops up. So if you're looking at an asset, I would always find an angle where nobody else sees an angle, if that makes sense. Like HMOs, that's kind of got really popular in Ireland. It's got, it always wasn't, but shared living has got really popular in Ireland at the moment. And I'd be looking now for a different strategy. I'd be looking for the permitted development, where everybody, even though it's out there, not a lot of people know about it, or my perception is not a lot of people know about it. And so I'm going through I've done my second one of those now at the moment. So that's another strategy. So just getting the knowledge around those different strategies where not other people are looking at. That's what I do. I kind of find what people are not looking at, and I try to figure it out. I try to figure with my team, with my construction team, with my engineers. Like that particular property we went sale agreed on today, great location, commercial on the ground floor, and I think has 8 rooms on the uppers, and protected structure, derelict building. Dublin City Council had been in there. They've made a report on it. People will run from that, but that's the opportunity. I believe that's the opportunity. And I know you said, Porrick, today that there was a lot of derelict buildings up in Derry. I think there's a great opportunity, but you have to have the right team to take this project on, and that's really, really important. You have to have the right contractors, the right builders, the right architects, the right legal people, and that comes with time, or you can JV with people.
That's what I was going to say to you, Gareth. I know it's something you've mentioned before in the past, is JVs, is looking at other people's strengths and maybe bringing them in as part.
Yeah.
Have you, out of your career, you've pioneered that particular aspect. Maybe give us some examples of that and how you've done that as well.
In JVing with people?
JV,
yeah. I just like working with people, to be honest. But I like working with the right people. I don't work with too many, but I enjoy that, and I always enjoy it. My strengths wouldn't be business systems and stuff like that, around finance, all of that kind of stuff. I don't like. I identify an asset. So my strengths are I can identify assets that will give good returns, and I always aim for 30% uplift. At the Craig 30%, that's my model, and I can do that. I can put teams together, and I can start a project and I can finish a project. Once I start a project, I'm really good at finishing, and they are my strengths. Everything behind that, I don't want to hear about it. I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy massive spreadsheets. I know you do, Lisa. I don't particularly enjoy finance, though I've got a good knowledge of it. But I like building relationships, and so when people see my strengths and I see their strengths, then we just come together. And I've had several JV partners, very successful within those JVs, and some bring money, some bring other stuff to the partnership, and they've all worked very well. Some of them that we just get the rewards from them. Now they're complete, and we're just getting the rewards year on year, forever cash, I call it. So we're a couple of them, we finished the portfolio with the investors, and all we're doing now is just taking the money year on year. And then I'm currently in two JV partners now at the moment.
Very good.
My strategy in JV partners is building multi-million pound portfolios. I don't want to just do one or two, because you may as well go big instead of just doing one or two, and that doesn't interest me. So anybody I JV with now has to have the same vision as me.
Yeah, but I suppose, though, there's something to be said for if you're kind of new enough, like I'm only in it, say, 3 years. If I go going for the one of these big multi-million pounds, like I'm setting myself up for failure. So, you know, depending on where you are in your journey, I suppose it depends on the size of your investment. Would you agree, like, that if you're only kind of new at it?
100%. And I still buy two-bed, three-bed semi-houses, by the way. That's a more longer strategy for me. So I still buy the single, if I get an opportunity of a deal, I would still buy those. So just so you realize, I don't be purchasing multi-million pound properties. My average properties would probably purchase around anything from 600,000 to 1.5 million. That's my range. But we'd have the facility to buy multiple of those within a couple of months. I have a capacity of doing about 8 bills at any one time. So we're always kind of churning out. Like we're finishing, I think, 3 at the moment, wrapping up 3 at the moment. So we've.
And Gareth, what I like about you, what I see on your social media then as well, is that you are always learning. Like you don't ever stop learning. You're always like, you know, you're reading books, you're sending yourself to courses, you are, you mentioned all your mentors that you have. Like, I've seen a couple of books that you've put up and I've said, oh, I might go and purchase those books actually. So you never stop learning. Like, you don't think you know it all, right? Like, what's the importance to you of continued learning?
I don't know what there's a great quote about that, about when you stop learning or you think you know everything. 100%. What I'm always looking for is how do I get into the next room? And that next room is as people that are smarter than me. So I'm always chasing that next room and where that is. And so I'll go to masterminds. I've signed up in the States for a mastermind now that's on every quarter. I've signed up for another mastermind in the UK, a guy called Jason Valente. He was on Alan Sugar's Apprentice. I think he won that 1 year and he's done a mastermind. So I'm in, and James Kahn is the next speaker of that, and that's on a monthly basis. So I'm always trying to identify where I'm not the smartest guy in the room, where I'm the idiot in the room, and that's where I kind of want to be. And I want to be challenged constantly in my thinking, because I think because I certainly don't know it all, and this guy is smashing it out there much more than I'm actually doing it. So I want to in the States, when the one I'm in the States, the guys are doing 40-50 million pound deals. I want to know how they structure that. I want to see what that looks like. I'm not saying I'm going to do it, but I just want to be challenged on how. I think we're a little bit cocooned in Ireland, there's some great visionaries in Ireland. But I was recently in Dubai, and the first time ever in Dubai, and what he created there, but some of these guys that in the likes of CG and stuff like that I'm on, the Collective Genius Mastermind, they're smashing it, doing 40-50 million pound deals.
So what's your vision then? What's Gareth in say 20 years time? Where do you want to be?
Where do I want to be?
Yeah.
Oh God, where do I want to be? Okay, so I love what I do. Every morning, I'm so passionate of what I do, and I'm getting more and more passionate about what I do, and I just want to continue. I want to continue doing what I do, whatever that looks like. And it's like when I say larger deals, I'm probably giving myself stories or beliefs that I can't attain those bigger deals. Do I have a want for them? Probably not. I'll tell you what I'll probably do. I'll probably go to the States and I'll probably do a multi-family deal in the near future. That's what I'm kind of looking at doing. And who knows where that will take me. I enjoy being around people in the business. I enjoy talking to yourselves. I could talk about property all day long. I enjoy learning the different strategy you're doing, the different strategies Patrick's doing, the creative strategy. And then the rewards of that then is obviously we get paid for what we do. But not only that, I provide really good accommodation. I'm at a certain level of accommodation, but I provide really good accommodation for people. I enjoy that as well. And I enjoy making sure that people have a good home to live in. That's very rewarding for me. I described to a person the other day, actually one of my investors came over, he said, what do you get out of this? This was a big project in Dublin City and I'm almost completed. I said, remember the day you stood in this? He says, yeah. I said, it was a blank canvas. He said, it was. I said, what's it like now? He said, oh, it's a beautiful. I said, it's a masterpiece. To me, creating, bringing a building back to life just really just gives me so much. When I'm sitting in a room after being painted, sometimes I go down to, I know people will laugh, I go down to a building and I'll stand in it. And it's just a certain energy that you can, that you know that you just brought back. You're just, renovating buildings, building teams, having my team around me, just gives me great joy. So what will I be doing in 20 years? Lisa, honestly, I'll say if you we'll be having this conversation here, but we'll be bigger and better.
Well, that's what I'll be. That's the ambition. That's the ambition to have. Let's take it back a wee bit there, Gareth, because as I say, you've got a build team, you've got the letting side of the business, you've got the you've got a really good structure going there. But it all needs to be funded. And the big thing you keep referencing to there a couple of times was investors. And it's something, I suppose, that some people understand, some people don't understand. Maybe give us a wee bit of a clarity on that for our listeners. First of all,
I suppose I was very fortunate when the crash happened, the downturn happened, there was loads of opportunity. There was so much opportunity. And I was just very fortunate that I had one particular high net worth individual that backed me in that front. So that was how, and I was picking properties up that were, to be honest, were 500,000 or 600,000. I was picking them up for 100,000 or 150,000 at the time. So I got a good spring. We finished that portfolio. And then I suppose people seeing what social media, haven't been on that. I've only actually been on social media because I was told the importance of that. But it was all kind of word of mouth, and people who knew me, who were in different businesses, they were in trading businesses and didn't, I wanted to get into property, but wanted somebody that was that had the knowledge around property. And I was just fortunate enough that I knew a few people. And I was networking in the right places, to be honest. And I had good introductions to people. And a good few people knew me in the industry for what I did, for what I was doing. So I was very fortunate, to be honest. I'm very grateful for the partnerships.
And you think, suppose, like that aspect of someone who has a trading business and they understand that they need assets. There's an element of connection there. And suppose that's where people get a wee bit confused in a way, an investor, geez, they have money, they won't invest with me. But yeah, the question is how can someone who's starting out in property approach an investor?
I suppose it's getting into the right rooms. And I always put myself in the right rooms or the right network groups. And I literally just talked about what I did. And that's all I done. And then people, obviously I was selling without selling. And just people asked me, would you be interested in investing or in JVing? But I was selling without selling within those rooms, if that makes sense. Then if I was starting out now, how would I get into the, well, obviously you'd have to have a certain, first of all, you have to have confidence around property, and you have to have something that they want. Okay, so that's the first thing. So I have a knowledge around property. My business is property, and I'm successful in that. The perception is I'm successful in that field. But I suppose I've got a lot I can show people. I've two investors coming over on Monday from the UK, and I'll be bringing them around 6 or 7 projects that I have at the moment. And the project sells themselves. And that's why probably people will invest it. They're seeing what I'm doing, and I just run the numbers with them. And after that, do I push them? I don't really. I don't push anybody if they're into investing, because I don't invest with everybody. By the way, I've turned away people, JV partners, because we just weren't. It wasn't the right energy, to be honest. And it would have it wouldn't have worked out. So I don't always go with everybody. I'm very selective in who I work with, because I want people to be on the same path as that I'm on, and I'm on a 20-year path. If people are getting into to turn money in 2 or 3 years, I'll take investors on that and I give them a return on their money. But long term JV partners, I'm 10 to 20 years.
Yeah,
Did I answer that question for you, Porrick? So the main thing is that they're getting in the right room with people, and that they've got a knowledge that they're selling something, because you have to be always selling something, and you have to have a knowledge. If you're saying that somebody starting off and buying their first bike to let and then trying to get somebody to invest with them, that's risky. That's high risk. Okay. So a proven track record, you have to have a proven track record. I had that. And people invest in it. People invest in knowledge, by the way. That's what people invest in.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So Gareth, just in relation then to raising money and raising finance, it's something that I really enjoy doing, is going around networking, you know, selling without selling. I suppose I come from a background where I find sales, that salesy kind of pitch, really cringy. I really don't enjoy doing it myself. And in order to put myself out there on social media, which I have to do, I found it really kind of getting out of my comfort zone. How important is it to stick to your strengths and just doing what you're really good at, which in your case is, like, you know, property and you know, meeting people, etc., or should we actually push ourselves out of our comfort zone in order to try and push ourselves further? You know, is there an argument to be said that stick to what you're good at, or is there an argument to be said, look, push yourself out of your comfort zone, and otherwise nothing's ever going to happen?
Okay, I remember the first post I put out on social media, because I was always cringed at and I still cringe, and I still look for my daughter's approval when I put a post out. And sometimes they say, "Dad, would you please take that one down?" I have a team doing that in the background. I don't even know when it's going up, by the way. Sometimes, social media has given me a lot of good contacts, by the way. It's given me staff. It's given me property, that I've got property through that, and it's also given me funding. Had I not, I probably wouldn't have met my business partner. That's current now. I've another business partner with two businesses in the UK, and they're in biomass fuel. So I wouldn't have met that through social media. I have a JV partner in Leeds, and I wouldn't have met that without social media. So I believe putting yourself out there after a while, like, I suppose even podcasts for me can be quite difficult, because I always think I come across so. But I really think this year, hence why I said I put myself onto six podcasts, and we'll see where it goes from there. I'm enjoying it now. I'm getting comfortable, and thank you both for having me on. I'm enjoying the question and enjoying chatting, which is actually. But I think it's very important that we challenge yourself. I really think it's so important. So how are people going to know you?
Yeah.
And it's probably, I know it's a bit of an Irish thing that we don't want people to know what we're doing, or, you know, but the way marketing has moved on, and the way showing is selling, really, in a way, but it's about a personal brand. People love to know about you and about your story and how you can connect with them. And again, if there's authenticity within that, you know, people really, really shine to that. And I think there is a shyness within the Irish culture as well. We don't like boasting about ourselves or taking a photograph of ourselves, but that's the younger generation is probably a little bit better than us guys. But you're doing really well, Gareth.
I don't know, Pori. So, you've been from Donegal. You're a brave man. Great job on your social media. I'm really enjoying it. I keep taking screenshots, and I said to my marketing team, look at that girl.
So why I'm doing social media, I suppose, is to get the investors. I suppose when I first started out, I did a bit of training in the UK, and it was all about, you know, putting yourself out there. It's not about who you know, it's about who knows you. And again, I was never, I would never have put anything up on social media in the past. But I got, and I believe that the UK people and the UK training companies do this and so much better than the Irish do. So I think they're well above, and they don't have this thing where what we do in Ireland is that we are worried about what people think of us, because Ireland is a much more smaller culture, whereas in the UK they're much more anonymous, and so they don't mind putting themselves out there. So I suppose I got my training from them, and I started doing it, and it was more about so when I first started, I started getting property and I didn't have investors. So I was always struggling then, and always like, I need to get an investor for this. I had private lenders, basically. So this time round, I said, no, I'm actually going to do it the other way, and I'm going to go look for the private lenders and the private investors first. And then the property can kind of, you know, I'll find the property. So that's essentially what my social media is probably all about. Sometimes I do feel like I am boasting and bragging. I'm like, oh God, how do I not say it like this? How do I not sound like this? But then equally, that's what sales is. That's what marketing is. It's all about like 100%. Showing what you can do.
There's a friend of mine that's on the it's on Collective Genius Mastermind. Is a young guy, Asian guy called David Choi, and we had lunch, and that guy is smashing it in America. And when I was last over there, maybe it'd have been the time before that, he had something, I don't know, maybe 10,000 followers. You want to see his marketing now. One of his posts just blew up and it hit a million views. That guy has now got 500,000 followers, and he's getting endless deals. He's getting endless finance offers. And that's the, people over there are completely different than the way we and maybe that's, I don't know what it is with the Irish mentality, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know what it is with us. If they grab the strategy that I'm trying to teach them, I'm trying to teach them, obviously there's an element of risk, but I'm trying to take low leverage, low risk, how to add value. Now, obviously I'm helping them in the add value, but they're buying small little buy-to-lets, and I'm showing them how to renovate them, I'm showing them how to let them. But everything I'm saying here, I'm executing on a daily basis. I might be perceived to be doing that at a little bit larger scale, but there's each project is just one project, and it comes with a number of challenges. And like, I had building controls on me yesterday, I had during the week, I had enforcement on me, and you just have to keep them batting. Okay, here it goes again. Like yesterday, I said to myself, God, I just want to give this up sometimes, you know. Yeah. when you're having a bad day. But then I reached out to a couple of colleagues that are in the game, and I said, oh man, what a day I've had today. And they say, oh yeah, I've had a thing. And then they lift you up, and then bang, you go at it again the next day. And that's what we do, and that's what entrepreneurs do. And that's I'm sure Elon Musk sometimes wakes up in the morning and he said, God, I want to pack this. I'm just saying, we all have those down days, and it's not letting those down days keep you down. I just know it's part of the journey. Some days I have, I'm down, some days I'm up. That's it. I mean, you have challenges, but it's sharing those challenges, and it's having people around you. Like we're talking now, I have challenges every single day, guys. I've challenged with teams, I've challenged with finance, getting deals. I've all the challenges that every day, but it's how you deal with those. And I just chunk them down, and nothing is too big, and I've got the resources and the people around me. And if you see the people, I have a close network of people that I confide in, that I have friends, and they're the people that are helping me grow every day.
Yeah, it's really good. I suppose when I first started out, I find property a bit of a lonely business. And especially if it's just like it was just me flying the flag for a while. Like my husband kind of was, you know, I was an accountant for so long. It was a steady Eddie job. It was good pay. And all of a sudden I was getting out of this steady income and into a world that I didn't really know anything about. And so I not only when you first start out in property, I suppose, not only do you have to your own doubts in your head, you've also got the doubts of, say, your close friends and family who are only just looking out for you. They just want you to not fail. But to have that there on top, to be honest, starting out was really kind of like a rocky road. But it was just that if you have the resilience and the belief in yourself that actually, no, look, this is going to work. Just bear with me. Because property is such a capital intensive business, I find that it can be risky. If you make a mistake, hopefully it's just a grand or two that you could probably get over, but you know, it could be a lot bigger. You know, some of these mistakes can be big. So I suppose
just on that, I'd like to just say to you, just on the people that you have around you, that is one of the most important things for me now. In my journey, and I see that and I'm probably 30 years into my journey, so but it's really, really important having the right people around you. And it's when I look back, everybody comes into your life for a reason, but you just got to be so, I'm so careful with the people I have around me these days, and I'm really, really careful, and that includes family. That includes, so I'm very protective of that. Some people said some people would say I'm overprotective. That's fine. I'm not out to impress them.
Yeah.
But I just have good people around me, and I have a really high awareness of that. So I really believe that's so important. And in fairness, I say you're surrounding yourself with good people as well. I see on social media, I know that's the only perception, is not always reality, but I mean, you're going to the right places, and you are. So, yeah, finding the right people.
And you kind of have to, because I suppose not everyone's in the same business as me. Like, say, my friends would have been in the past, would have been accountants. They would have been like, you know, the professional kind. But then your circles have to change as you change, you know. So what did you do, Gareth, before property? Was it always property, or was you in the corporate world before?
I wasn't. Well, I'll tell you what I started off doing. I used to push trolleys in Dublin Airport for when I started off at 16. Then I worked my way up. Obviously, I'd done all my exams. And then I worked my way up in Dublin Airport to a manager level, and didn't enjoy it at all. And I always knew there was something inside me. I didn't know whether it was property or not. And then I came across, obviously, I think we all came across Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I think that was one of my first books. And then I came across this guy, Russ Whitney. And then I was sitting there and I said, right. And did I really understand what, I hate using the word passive, it probably is not passive. But I came across that it paid you month on month. You've got to put a little work in, but less work than you do in your day job. So that was the attraction for me. And then when I really nailed that, I said, well, this is amazing. And then I just loved, and to be honest, I just loved renovating buildings. And then when I found out that there's a way that you could renovate buildings, keep them and make money out of them, I enjoyed it.
That was good, yeah. So you didn't have a construction background at all then to begin with?
Absolutely none. But I worked with my uncle for about 6 or 7 years, and he did build houses and built houses and done extensions, and he was a small builder, and I worked for him for about 6 years, but that was tough. He's 80 now, because he still works with me. Actually, he's 87, and he still nips around. But he was in construction. I worked for him for 6 years, but that was tough. He was a tough man, as you can imagine. So I suppose I learned the basics of construction from that. And I was always good with my hands, and I was always, yeah. And I was never afraid to get my hands dirty. The first few reforms I'd done all myself, but a few friends, and I done them all myself.
That's mad, yeah. Well, that's really cool. Because I suppose there's a perception out there, in order to get into property, you need to have that like kind of construction background. And like, I'm proof that there, you don't have to, you know, you just, we've all, I suppose, look, we've all got different strengths. And I suppose mine would have been the numbers and that, and yours would be like bringing together the people. And so I'm currently in a position at the moment whereby I'm looking to, I'm possibly joint venturing now with a young fella. He's an engineer. And I suppose, but up until now, it was in my head, just don't joint venture with anyone, just do it yourself. It's easier, you know, you can do things, you can control the situation a lot better. But I suppose
let go a bit. What's the worst that happened? I said let go a bit.
Yeah, and I think that, and I think that's I would actually enjoy working with somebody else, and that, and so yeah, I've just got to get that out of my, that block out of my head, that I don't have to control everything. And
one of the things that's been really good for me is actually I done the profile testing, and that's been really good to see what profile I am. I do the Roger Hamilton one, Gene is You.
The wealth dynamics.
And my God, a tempo. Well, I'm sorry, I did it the other day, and I'm a star mechanic. That's changed over the last probably 6 or 7 years, but I'm still on 40% tempo, which is why that I can start projects and I can finish projects well. But it's very important, actually, that is, and it's when partnerships don't work, it's, sorry, not that they don't work, but it's identifying what strengths each person can bring. It's amazing now the partnerships that I have around me are the complete opposite end of that profile testing, which I seem to really attract good opposites to me, which is amazing, and which I don't even have to think about on the other end of the scale now.
If people want to connect with you, Gareth, on where can they find you? Which social media channels?
I'm on all the social media channels. Sorry, my website is www.garethpears.com, and all my social media channels are on that. Connect with me and reach out if any. I love property. I love talking about it. I love talking about strategies. I love learning different strategies, to be honest. And I love meeting people. So if you're ever in London, I spend a good bit of time in London, and Dublin and Leeds. So if you're ever in any of those destinations, I would definitely love to meet up for a chat. And when you're next down in Dublin, Porrig and Lisa are up in London. Let's meet up.